about these words that Jesus quotes from Isaiah when he walks into a synagogue in Nazareth. He is rejected at Nazareth. They go, we know you, we know a bit too much about you, we're not going to listen to you, see you later. And Jesus has this moment where he says, well, a prophet is always rejected in his hometown and that sort of stuff. But listen to the words that Jesus quotes. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. I'll read it again just so you can ponder on it. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind and to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. That is, it's called the Nazareth Manifesto. How exciting. We thought the first manifesto was the Tamworth Manifesto, written by Peel in 1932, but that's my history degree, sorry. History A level. Right, so, do you notice something in that? He says you've got to give good news to the poor. You've got to give good news to the prisoner. You've got to give recovery of sight for the blind, and you've got to let the oppressed go free. That's great news if you're poor, if you're a prisoner, if you're blind, and if you're oppressed. Yeah? Great. If you're in that situation, you want some good news. Now, I'm going to share something really personal with you, and I've wrestled with myself over whether I was going to do this or not, but I'm going to do it anyway. Okay? Are you happy with that? Yes. Good. I'm so pleased. When I was young, only last week, when I was growing up, we had nothing. And I don't want you to feel sorry for me. I need you to understand this. We had nothing. The only holidays we ever went on were free ones. And when we went on our free holiday, we never had any money. So we used to have to go to all of the free exhibitions. And we would go into the souvenir shop. And I learned from a very young age that you were not allowed anything from souvenir shops. Did you know that? They sell nothing. All of that is just for you to look at. Because we had nothing. There were times when we didn't know how we were going to eat. My dad was given a sovereign for his sovereign ring for his 21st birthday. And he sold it so we could eat. We inherited, or he inherited, a beautiful table that was oak, and it was absolutely gorgeous. He sold it so we could eat. We didn't have a table to eat it on, but he sold it so we could eat. There was a time when the church had a problem, and they forgot to pay him for 3 weeks. And we had nothing at all, apart from some wonderful members of the congregation who didn't know there was a problem. The West Indian contingent of our congregation turned up with enough food to keep us going. They thought they were just blessing us. They didn't realize they were really blessing us. So I get what it means to hear good news to the poor. Because when you've had absolutely nothing, someone telling you that there are riches, wow, To say, you know, and I have, and my kids will, well, they'll do whatever they do. I always try and make sure that they have, this is because of my own hang-ups, I try and make sure that they have something from the souvenir shop. Even if it's only a pencil. Because I know what it's like to see all these things, to walk around and go, yeah, but I can't have that. Now, I know that some people will have been in a similar situation, and some of you have never been in that situation. But it's good news to hear that God will provide for you. The good news of that story was that group in the church that provided for us. The fact that I had a loving parent, and we used to come up with all sorts of stuff to do for free. You wouldn't believe the amount of things that we came up with in order to do for free. But there is good news. But good news can only come if you're in the midst of bad rubbish. You don't get the gospel unless you understand that it's good news. You don't understand what it is to let the oppressed go free unless you've been oppressed. You don't understand what it is to let the prisoner go free unless you're in prison. You don't understand what it is to let the blind see unless you've been blind. And there's really great news here. And that's what Jesus comes to do. He says, I've come to give you good news. And I don't care whether you've been in, well, I do care if you've been in that situation that I was in, but do you know what, just to put it in real context, my mum and dad earned so little, they were both working, my mum and dad earned so little, we were on income support, and my dad was the minister of a church. That says a great deal, to be honest, but there you go. The good news is that Jesus has set us free from the bad news that we all live in. Every single one of us, whether we are Jacob about to move in for a wrestling move, or whether we're Jill Elson, every single one of us is living with the actions of sin on our lives or in our lives. Each one of us has fallen short of the glory of God, and each one of us is oppressed by other people's sins. Jesus says, I've come to set you free from that. Isn't that great news? That's the point. You should all be happy because Jesus has set us free. That's the good news that he comes to proclaim. He doesn't just come to sit around and go, oh yeah, you know, I love you and you're my friend. It's more than that. I love you so much, I'm prepared to take all of that pain and all of that suffering and all that stuff that's holding you back. I'm prepared to take it all away. I'm prepared to take it all on myself. I'm prepared to die on a cross and be raised to life so that you don't have to go through that pain anymore and you can live life in all its fullness. Now that should be exciting. That is the good news. That is what we're called to proclaim. Now, do you, and you can put your hands up, this is a moment of absolute... you know, I'll be baptizing anyone who isn't baptized by the time they do this. But if you put your hands up, do you believe that Jesus died on the cross for you? Oh, great. So if you believe that Jesus died on the cross for you, do you believe that Jesus died on the cross for your worst enemy? Right, there you go. So if you believe that Jesus died on the cross for your worst enemy, whoever they are, that fiend, if that's the point, then you need to tell other people about it. Because you've received the blessing and the forgiveness and the peace and you know and the assurance that you know from Jesus because of the cross and because of his resurrection. Your job is to tell other people the good news, no matter how much you don't like them. So, I'd like us to ponder that for a moment. We're going to, now, Jesus told a story about evangelism and how effective it is and how actually you've got to keep on going. And rather than reading it, I'm just going to play you the video. So we're going to skip Tell Me the Stories and just go straight to the video, please. Malcolm. We need to persevere. Yep. Okay. So sometimes we get a reaction that just basically says, this is just falling on stony ground and you need to stop right now. Okay. What about a harvest? Because it says that the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Which means that there is a harvest. But let me ask you a question. If you were to, Avon might be able to help me with this. Avon, if I were to pick a grape two months before it was ready, what would it be like? What, sorry? Anticipation. Okay. Would it be pleasant to eat if I were to pick a grape 2 months before it was ready? Whether you catch it in the freezer or not. Okay. Okay. But basically, if you pick something before it's ready, you know, like a lovely juicy tomato. Do you know what colour tomatoes are before they're ready? Green. Pick a green tomato. It's much harder. It's not as pleasant. It's a bit very, very, if you were to eat it, it'd be very, very sharp and not very pleasant. You can fry them because there's a film called Fried Green Tomatoes. But there you go. What, sorry? And you can make chutney with them, yes. But it's not the best that it can be because it's not ready. In the same way, a grape picked beforehand is likely to be harder, it's likely to be sharper, it's not going to be as good as it possibly can be. Part of our problem with evangelism is that we think that everyone is ready. And then we wonder why we get the reaction of stop. But actually, not everyone is ready to hear the gospel because the ground it's fallen on is not right. So we need to make sure that we're ready to work when the harvest is ready and not just sit there trying to make a harvest when there is none. A man came into my college when I was training for ministry, and he was a lovely, lovely minister, and he'd been in a rural church where everyone in his congregation had been baptized about 30 years prior. He didn't have any new people in his congregation, and he was struggling. And he said, what this has taught me is that I need to do ministry and I need to preach the gospel even though I haven't had a baptism in 20 years. Imagine that. Imagine a church that hasn't had a baptism for 20 years. How would that feel? As a church, you'd feel really discouraged, to be honest. We've got a baptism coming up. That's fantastic. That's great news. That's for us. It's to give us that boost of, do you know what? I'm working, the harvest is plentiful, and the workers are few. We're just getting a new worker when we have a baptism. But it's about keeping going. Anyway, he came back the next year because we said we'd pray for him. because he looked defeated. Just before I go on with that, Mother Teresa, Teresa, whichever way you want to call her, she had some very intense experiences of God when she was a young woman. And then she had 40 years where she felt God was silent and said nothing to her. How do you do the ministry in the silence? How do you serve in nothingness, as it were? St. John of the Cross referred to it as the long dark night of the soul. We prayed for this guy, and he came back, and you've never seen a man with such a big smile on his face, because he'd got one baptism. One baptism. First baptism that church had seen in 30 years. The first one he'd seen in 20, because he'd been there for 20 years. He got a baptism, and he was just so over the moon, and just someone walked through the door and said, "Can I get baptized, please?" And he was like, "Yes!" Jump on the man, pin him down. That's it. We'll get you in the water. We'll get you wet. That's not a problem. But it's that sense of being encouraged. But the evangelism is about sharing the good news. But it's also about reaping a harvest. Now, we've been looking at, this is for the children's benefit, in the morning we've been looking at the Baptist Union Declaration of Principle, which we all know off by heart. But point three of the Declaration of Principle is that it is the responsibility of every member to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ for the evangelization of the world. Not even Lyndhurst. The world. Every single one of us has a responsibility to be a worker in the harvest field. And we are there in order to reap that harvest. And we have to be wise. We have to look at the signs. This is why Jesus tells the parable of the sower. We have to look at the signs. Is that person ready for a harvest? Probably not. But there will come a point where they are. And what does it say at the end of the parable of the sower? It says there was a harvest of 30, 60, 100 folds. When the harvest is ready, the harvest will be more than we can imagine. And we just need to make sure that we are ready and willing to work. A few years ago, I wrote about sunflowers in the What's On magazine, because Rachel was given a sunflower. They had a sunflower competition at work, which was exciting. And she was given 5 seeds, weren't you, dear? We planted them, and from one head of sunflower, I got 127 seeds. Yes, I did, because I was writing an article, so I had to make sure I was right. So I had, from one seed, we got 127 seeds. And then as you carry on, if you think about that, if one seed gives you 127 responses, you can then plant 127, and that will give you 127 in that 127. I haven't done the maths. It will give you all of that, and then it will grow. But it's when you harvest at the right time. If you take that sunflower head off beforehand, you won't get any seeds. If you don't do it at the right time, it will just fall flat on its face, and the birds will come and take it away. So my encouragement to us is that every single one of us, from Jacob all the way up, need to be able to proclaim Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior at the right time to the right people. And that's allowing God to enter into us through His Holy Spirit and to use us at the right time. To say to God, what are the positive words that you want me to say? Do you want me to speak now? Think about your families, and we're going to... Well, actually, we'll do this in a moment. We're going to sing, and then we'll pray, but I want you to pray in a specific way. But we're going to sing, hear the call of the King.